Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is Friday, May 11th, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Please visit the LL Research websites, llresearch.org, which is home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, The Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4th.org, which is our community website featuring forums and blogs and chat rooms. I will be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask Carla a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. Carla, are you with us?
I am, Monica. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing pretty good, actually. Actually, very good. It's been an interesting week.
Yeah, me too.
Interesting can mean a lot of things. But will Jim be joining us today?
He will.
I'm here. Oh. Hello.
Hey, Jim.
Hey.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well.
A birthday boy.
Oh, another yep. Taurus. Well, I'm having my birthday in a couple of days. So how about
kidding?
That?
Bulls together.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, happy birthday to you.
Thank you, and happy birthday to you.
Thank you. All right. May is a good month.
The best.
Okay. Well, great. Any quick announcements or anything?
Well, have I told you about the poetry book being going to be actually a book instead of online?
You know, I'm not sure if you told me that part. So
Well, it's new. Ian of Toronto, who runs the site, the LLResearch.org site, the great big library archive site, said that he would be glad to do a niche of my poems. And then he got the poems and he wrote back and he said, this is a book. Let's do a book. So my work was done. All I had to do was write an introduction for the book, which I did. And he's producing the book. And I have a lovely friend, Michelle Matosian, that I've known for 20 years. She loves The Live One and she's helped me with the covers for the Book of Days, Wanderer's Handbook, and 101. Beautiful covers all.
Absolutely.
And I told her the kind of poems that I have, and I said I use a lot of water imagery, and I really like, you know, I think my poems sometimes give the feeling of dancing. So she's using an image of me as like a seven-year-old dancing. It can't be seen as me. For one thing, I'm seven. For another, it's from the back. But it's probably my favorite picture of myself because it is a moment in flight. It's an image that was created because I was a counselor's kid and I could be pulled by the scruff of the neck when I was a child, and they wanted to make a picture of dancing to put in the children's camp brochure. I went to this camp for 12 years, yeah, altogether. And I loved it. I loved every minute of it there, and I was not a bad dancer. And, oh, my. And they took this picture of us doing a noise, Florence Fleming noise rhythm exercise called Gallop and Fly, in which you're a horse and you're galloping and galloping, and then you fly, you jump over something, you know, like a horse, only you fling your arms and your head back and you stretch for all you're worth. And they caught me right at the top of the leap. And it's a nice picture of a dancer in midair, seemingly flying. So then Michelle Matossian and I picked out an image that was a photograph, but it was all blues and it was moody and it had a storm approaching over the ocean, and really pretty. And she's going to superimpose the image of the dancer flying in the sky, and that'll be the cover of the book.
Ooh, that sounds cool.
I know. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I just can't wait.
Wow.
It just goes to show you, if you do a little bit every day, you know, because I've been working on this poetry for how long, Jim? Just editing it, you know. Probably 6 months.
At least 6 months.
Maybe more like a year, huh? And but I, you know, I'm feeling so poorly. I just, you know, I'd have to get myself together and then, like, focus for 5 minutes and then let it go for a while. And then, but you can do a poem and then let it go for a while and then pull up another poem. So there are a little over 200 pages worth of poetry in the book, and I can't wait to see it. I don't think it's good poetry. As I said in the introduction, I'm a good enough critic to know it's not good poetry. But, you know, I'm such a metaphysically oriented person that I figured maybe people would be feeling the same things that I was feeling, you know, their seekers, and would hit that poem and go, you know, that's how I feel, and feel like they weren't alone. And uh-huh. feel like they'd found, you know, a support. And that's the whole idea of my incarnation. I'm here for my people. I love the seekers that we are able to serve, and I just think it's the greatest privilege in the world. So I'm in alt. I'm very happy.
Wonderful. Well, I can't wait to see it. Will it be
mm-hmm.
illustrated on the inside?
No. It's just going to be, it's not even got a decent title because I didn't want to dignify it as if I thought it was good. So we're just calling it Poetry of Carl Elizabeth Ruckert. That's it. For what it is, buddy, here it is. And if people want to take a look at it, great. And if they don't, great. I don't, you know, no attachment to an outcome here. It's just I want to make it available. If people can use it, that would lift me up.
Well, I'm sure it's going to have value to like you said, when people are in that same state at that moment and they resonate with that. Just like music, you know, a certain song just really resonates
uh-huh.
with the state of mind the person or the emotions the person's feeling at the time. So you have
no
idea.
You know how it is when you're surfing and you're looking for something. It's like you pull that to you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, you don't usually surf in vain forever. Usually you come across something. And
mm-hmm.
hopefully that will be included in people surfing and be helpful to some. I sure hope so, Monica. I really do.
Oh, I'm sure. I have
yes,
no
indeed.
Doubt that it will.
Bless you.
Okay, I'm going to start with our opening riff for tonight, which is from session 43, question 8. Questioner, and I'm going to start in the middle of this question. Questioner, I skipped over the first part. When the Creator's light is split or divided into colors and energy centers for experience, then in order to reunite with the Creator, the energy centers must be balanced exactly the same as the split light was as it originated from the Creator. Is this correct? I am Ra. To give this query a simple answer would be nearly impossible. We shall simplify by concentrating upon what we consider to be the central idea towards which you are striving. We have many times now spoken about the relative importance of balancing as opposed to the relative unimportance of maximal activation of each energy center. The reason is, as you have correctly surmised, thusly the entity is concerned, if it be upon the path of positive harvestability, with the regularizing of the various energies of experience. Thus, the most fragile entity may be more balanced than one with extreme energy and activity in service to others due to the fastidiousness with which the will is focused upon the use of experience in knowing the self. The densities beyond your own give the minimally balanced individual much time, space, and space-time with which to continue to refine these inner balances.
Thank you, Monica. It's not easy to read raw sometimes. It's so dense. There's so much to say, even in just part of one question. And let me start here with the main point, which is the mistaken idea that many seekers have, that you perfect red ray and then you perfect orange ray and you go up the energy body, up the spine, perfecting red, orange, yellow, get into the heart, open the heart, and you perfect all this. You do it one at a time, and then you're able to go into the higher realms and you spend oceans of time, delicious time, perfecting blue ray and perfecting indigo. You can't do much about violet because it's a readout. So that is actually not the way it works. And it will be very disappointing to some people who really love to focus on meditation and the beautiful, wonderful virtues and capacities of indigo ray. Of course, there's no more fun in the world than those feelings that you receive when you're meditating well and you're feeling peaceful and au courant with the world and in tune with the creation, and you're expanded and your heart is open, and it's a wonderful place to be, spacious, wonderful place to be. The thing of it is, that's not the person who goes to the store and on the way gets crazy when somebody sideswipes you on the road or tries to, seemingly, by cutting you off on the expressway. It's not the you that you are when you're not thinking. You really have a very various, a very large personality, and not all of it can be subsumed into the higher density, the higher work, the higher meditations and stuff. You still have to do the housework every day. You can't do red ray and have it done. You can't do any of the rays and have them done. Now, I know it appeals to people because that idea that Ra puts forth about in the electrical body, each chakra can be worked on and worked on until it glows and it sparkles and it gets more and more radiant and it, you know, is more and more intense and powerful. The thing of it is, if it's not in balance with the other chakras, you haven't done much. You haven't gotten into sync with the energies of the Creator, because the split light of the Creator means that all of the energy centers are at least minimally balanced. So you have to go over and over and over, just like you have to wash dishes after every meal, you have to clean the bathroom every week and do the vacuuming. There's no way out. Housework, there it is. Dirt, there it is. A woman's or a person who cleans lifetime is never done with the housework. And we are never done with our housework. I love the image of Evelyn Underhill, a mystic that I enjoy reading, who says that she likes to think of her house of spirituality as two stories. On the first floor is the bedroom, red ray. The dining room and the living room, orange ray, the yellow ray, which is, you know, family and job, your work environment, all of those things. You have to clean up the kitchen, the dining room, the bathroom, the bedroom, all of those things that are on the first floor that may be very boring to you and seem less than spiritual. However, everything is spiritual. All is one. And red ray concerns are no less important than blue ray or indigo. As you go through life, then, you are looking not just to perfect your ability to meditate or any of those higher chakra skills. You're looking to stay balanced. You're looking to stay tuned, if I may use that word. A very important sentence in the midst of this is the most fragile entity, I'm quoting here, the most fragile entity may be more balanced than one with extreme energy and activity in service to others due to the fastidiousness with which the will is focused upon the use of experience in knowing the self. That means, in one minor example, that you, the fragile entity, get run down by this car and stomp on the brake and avoid death by inches, but you don't get mad. You lay that aside. Naturally, you're going to want to. And you say to yourself what my uncle did once, and I try to remember it every time. He said, "Buddy, there's room for you too." And he stomped on the brakes and sprained my wrist because I was not belted in the back seat. And I went into the front seat and hurt myself. But, you know, there was room for him. It just took a little doing. So I try to remember to say, "Buddy, there's room for you too." And that takes the anger and brings it back to me. Okay, it's not important about him. That's not about him. It's about me. And I am trying to stay out of trouble in yellow ray, and also in red ray, because red ray is the place where survival lurks. And if you were angry enough at him because you felt that you could have been killed, you know, you could easily have road rage yourself. Okay, you don't go there. You go to telling yourself, okay, let me pay attention to this. This is happening to me. What emotions am I feeling? And how can I balance them? And when you get a shot, not obviously when you're driving, but later that day when you sit down and you do this balancing, you remember the road rage guy. You remember how you felt, and you intensify that feeling of frustration and surprise and resentment and anger and rage. And you feel it as much as you can. And then holding that in mind, you ask to see the opposite of all of those emotions. 180 degrees out from those emotions are the emotions of love, acceptance, forgiveness, and all those strong, powerful, balancing, positive emotions that are equally valid. You hold them together in mind. Until you see that. You see that it's a question of balance, as the Moody Blues named an album a long time ago. It's a question of balance. You don't stay in the car. You don't stay in the rage. You go for the balance. And you can do that work no matter how fragile you are. And certainly I have worked endlessly during this 2 years that I've been unable to function in a normal way because of being in the hospital and having one lumbar spine surgery on my neck and then another one on my derriere, from which I still haven't risen from the bed because of difficulties with infections and so forth, although I think I am now going to get better rather quickly. I've got a new machine. The machine's functioning really well, but it's taken a solid year and 9 operations of repair trying to get the infections out of the wound in order to recover. So that I have needed balancing more than I do when I'm out collecting incidences of road rage, because why am I in bed? Why do I have to have pain? Why is this happening to me? All those questions come up, and they can lay you low. You can invite yourself to a pity party and never survive it. You know, you just dive into the pool and just spiral on down. It's very important that I not waste a single moment feeling sorry for myself. It's very important that all of us look at what happens to us, not in terms of poor me, but in terms of, now how can I respond to this in a loving way? Because it's not about what's happening to us. It's about our response. It's about the care that we give to the moments of our lives. And I think that it's very encouraging that the Ra group ends that paragraph with a statement as follows. The Ra says, the densities beyond your own give the minimally balanced individual much time, space, and space-time with which to continue to refine these inner balances. They're telling us to comfort us because we don't get it right. We spend a whole lifetime, and I don't know, maybe Gandhi got it right. I have great respect for him. Jesus undoubtedly got it right. I don't always get it right, that's for sure. And we have time. You know, minimally balanced is all you need to graduate. We can get into the densities where we'll be working on it. But, of course, anything that we can do in third density is going to be much more powerful because it's the density of choice. And it goes very quickly. So the decisions that we make, the tuning that we achieve, the I that each of us is at the point where we're walking the steps of light and we have died to the physical, is that which we will carry into our next experience in fourth density. And the more balanced and regularized that is, the less time we will have to spend on the first floor in the next density. We'll be able to spend more time in the second floor, meditating and serving and just having fun, having a wonderful time. I hope that each of you can find it in your heart continuously to forgive yourself for whatever you consider to be your poor choices of response, knowing that you always have another chance. But simply realize how important it is to intend to do the tuned thing when a choice point comes, when it's time to respond. Give yourself that spaciousness, that time, even if it's only a split second, to reach into your heart, open it up, and find the most loving, the most supportive, the most powerful way to help somebody. It may well be that you have to tell an unfortunate truth to somebody. It may well be that there's bad news to share, or that person will think it's bad news. But in the interaction, if you can open your heart and see that person as a soul, as you're explaining that in your opinion it might help to think about this and this and this, you're not criticizing the person, you're just giving them points to talk about, and they feel that. They feel the support. They feel the continuing encouragement. And it's a much different experience than the person who is just a bad critic, you know, just, shall I say, a good critic, and accurate, and killing, and hurtful. The same truth given by somebody that doesn't try to open his heart, and somebody who has an open heart and is speaking from a Blu-ray, an open heart, and an open throat chakra, is entirely different. It may even be the same words, but the feeling that carries those words from person to person, from energy body to energy body, is different. And that person will feel that difference and feel that love. So see yourself as powerful, even if you are as fragile as I am. And I admit, I have no problem admitting that I am one of your more fragile human beings. You know, doctors have been saying to my parents and then to me when I got old enough to say these things too directly that I would not last long. I will experience my 69th birthday this summer, July 16th. And I didn't get here because I was strong and powerful. I got here because I really am dedicated to serving. And I sing a song every morning that shows my attitude, and some of the words are these: take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to thee. Take my moments and my days, let them flow in ceaseless praise. Take my voice and let me sing always only for my King. Take my intellect and use every power as thou shalt choose. Take my will and make it thine. it shall be no longer mine. Take myself, and I will be ever, always, all with thee. That prayer begins my every day. I don't share it. I just say it to myself when I wake up. But it sets my intention for the day, and then Jim and I together find that a morning offering really helps to, you know, some time given to spiritual thought and meditation before you begin the day, before it all gets crazy. Yeah, it really helps to spend that time in meditation. Don't you think so, Jim?
Oh, definitely. It's an energizer for the entire day.
It's something we don't let go, and Jim's got, especially, he's got a packed schedule, but he does that first. We do that first, and then the rest of the day goes a little bit differently. Of course, you may feel that you've lost it entirely by 10:30 in the morning, depending on what's going on. But you can remember that moment where you intended to dedicate this day to service to the Creator and to others. As Jim says it every day, I think you say to seek, to serve, and to see the Creator. What's the rest of it, Jim? What's your prayer?
My prayer is to do the best I can to see the Creator in everything that I do and to glorify the Creator by doing a good job. You know, I cut grass. And
but I love your wording. The actual wording is to see, to seek, and to serve.
Right.
Yeah. Well, however you want to put it, the point is to set your intention. And then it doesn't matter if you're a big, strong guy or if you're a pretty fragile entity. Doesn't matter at all. If your will is powerful, you as a metaphysical being are powerful. And you have by far the greatest shot at being able to approach the vibration of the Creator. This is what we're trying to do here. Because the Creator's vibration is endlessly service to others. It's love itself. If we can intend every day to serve the Creator, and we end up being that for which we pray. Ra was several times noted that we couldn't express the truth as much as we could live it. So let's all live love. Let's all have fun with it. Take it lightly, but take it every day.
Okay, Carla, I do have a follow-up question getting back to what you said at the beginning of that regarding balancing the chakras.
Uh-huh.
If in third density the objective is to awaken the fourth chakra, the heart chakra, then I'm assuming if people have not yet activated the chakras above that, then by balancing the chakras, do you mean just the first four would be equally?
No, I mean, I would focus on the lower ones at first, but all of them respond well to balancing. It's just that we can't forget the lower ones when we get into balancing the higher ones.
Okay, but if
it is, we can't leave out that examination of the day's thoughts. It's all about thought. We are thoughts. The rest of it is illusion. The thoughts are the real part. So we look at our thoughts, and certainly it's Don used to say when he was alive that he meditated constantly, and I think it was entirely true. And I think what he meant by that was not so much that, he sat in meditation and went om or anything, but that he was always focusing on examining his thoughts, analyzing his thoughts, and tuning himself to a place of love. You definitely, I spend as much time as I can in the upper chakras, but I just can't forget the lower ones because I'm just as prone as anybody else. We are all prone to losing it, losing our temper with our family, with our job, with ourselves. We can be crueler to ourselves than anybody, and it's not funny. It's something we need to stop doing. Now, I certainly do not mean that, somehow, until you get the lower ones right, there's no use in meditating, because there's always use in meditating. But, you know, you got to start somewhere. So, you know, you meditate, but you also do the housework.
Okay, so I understand what you're saying as far as when your upper chakras are open, then you need to also work on the lower ones and not neglect those. What I'm wondering is two questions. Number one, how do you even work on the upper chakras? I mean, I understand about going back through the lower chakras and reviewing your day and the things that happen. The second question is, what about for those people who feel that maybe their upper chakras aren't even open yet at all? They're just doing good just to open up the heart. Then how does balancing the upper chakras even come into play for them?
Well, you don't really think of it that way. It's best if you don't think about it in terms that don't inspire you, because spirituality is a matter of inspiration. It's not so much a matter of intellect. So you need to run on inspiration. And if the best you can do is to get into the open heart, that's wonderful. Because you sit in that open heart and the Creator is right there. That is a place where you meet the Creator, right inside yourself, in the secret place of prayer. And there's a wonderful thing in the New Testament somewhere about, and what I have told you secretly, shouted on the housetops. I think Paul said it, not Jesus. But I would have to look that up. But at any rate, spend time. And if you think that you're a lousy meditator, that's okay. I'm a lousy meditator. It's really worked for me. I encourage everybody to give themselves credit for being able, and more able than they think they are. I've got a little sign somewhere that says, always remember, you're better than you think you are, and you can do more than you think you can. And it's so true. Give yourself the credit right up front. Give yourself that feeling of being a competent and powerful person. Set your intention, and then do the best you can with it. And don't judge yourself, because tomorrow you just get up and start over. You've always got another day. You've always got another chance. And really, the people that feel humble and that feel that they're doing well just to get into the open heart may well have better developed upper chakras than they know. They just may be unaware of their own resources. And I think one way to become aware of who you are and to know who you are is to spend some time in silence with the Creator. I love the phrase tabernacling with the Creator in your own heart. And, you know, if you can spend 5 minutes just intending to tabernacle with the Creator in your heart, to invite, you know, Jesus says several times, knock and it shall be opened to you, seek and you shall find. Well, go into that secret place of prayer. Go into that open heart. I know my reference to Christian, it's the way I was brought up and the way I think, but if you can take Christianity out of it and just say wherever, you know, a phrase bothers you, just say love. Same thing. You'll be okay. In no way do I want to discourage anybody by saying, no, you've got to get those things right before you can go on. Hit it all at once. Definitely. You know, try the journaling. Try the meditating. Try all of those things that are subsumed under the, shall we say, the drop-down menu on the Indigo Ray chakra, ways of using the abilities and the light of the Indigo Ray. Try it all. Some people are gifted at one thing, some at another. You never know what's going to help. You never know what's going to open things up for you.
Okay, thank you, Carla. And I'd like to remind everyone that we do love having live callers, so please feel free to give us a call at 646-595-2294, 646-595-2294. Be sure to hit the one key if you'd like to ask your question live on the air. You're listening to In the Now with Carla L. Ruckerts. Okay, I'm going to go to a question submitted from the chat room from Kelly Roy. Question, I am currently in the middle of so many big life things, working many hours, taking care of the elderly, fitting in my spiritual passions through being a holistic healer, and soon going to be living with five people instead of one. So my question is, it sounds like a big transition. My question is, what do you suggest I do to bring in more balance and stay well through this? Thank you so much.
Jim, why don't we start with you in this one, because you had more trouble than I did when we had seven volunteers in the house. I think that would be a good place to start.
Well, I think you have to have a common goal among all the people, if that's possible. I don't know in this situation whether it would be or not. But if there's something that each person can give his or her allegiance to that brings you all together, that's most helpful in order to blend energies. Sometimes you have to have frequent conversations or consultations, you might say, with the group to see what it is that each one feels is important as a goal for the group and as something that they want to give their energies to. I find it much more difficult for me, especially, and other people I've noted who try to live with groups of folks, if there isn't some sort of a unifying principle that the group feels is important and they are willing to give over their individual energies to and to make a priority in their lives.
Not everybody can do that, of course, and through the course of 3 or 4 years, we lost five of the seven people that had lived in the house. And it was only natural. We had no attachment to their staying or to their going. I had a terrible time with a few of them because, you know, when people are having trouble themselves, they can be very cruel. And they have a tendency to blame somebody else. And I got to blame a lot because I was the spiritual head of the household. And everything I did was wrong. I was told that I was so many horrible things that you wouldn't recognize me, Monica. And I would hold on to it and work to support them, and then I would come upstairs to my room and cuddle with Jim and sob my heart out.
Aww.
You know, but it was important to me. I mean, if you're really the head of a spiritual house, you need to listen to people, and you need to assist them with their growth, and if they're going to blame you for everything, that doesn't mean that they're right. It doesn't, you know, you just need to take it in and not let it hurt. But of course it hurts. You need not to take it personally, but of course you take it personally. So there was more balancing to do during those years. And I imagine that there will be more balancing for what was the name?
Or oh,
the person that wrote
Kelly Roy.
Kelly, yeah, Kelly will find him or herself against the wall from time to time and need to go upstairs and have a cry. A cry is good. A cry gets it out and gives you the peace to have some spaciousness around it. And, you know, it's good to get that excessive emotion out, not to give it back to the other person, but to get through, to move through it so that you can continue being a genuinely loving person, a genuinely understanding person. Now, who's to say whether I succeeded or not? But those two that stayed have been incredible. I suppose more people know about Gary Bean because he's become the admin at L&L and does all the responding to everybody that writes in. We also have a caretaker for our farm, and that entity is also incredibly wonderful and extremely helpful and has been helpful in this time of illness, pitching in like crazy. We truly are a family. And I think that's what you're going for, is something that takes time to develop. It takes time to develop trust. And you have to have repeated instances where that person has been very cruel to you. And you thought to yourself, okay, that was a blessing that was harder to take than some. And then you swallow it down, and you think about what's really bugging this person, and you do the best you can with your insight and your intuition to respond, not because you're hurt, but because you want to support that person. It doesn't matter if that person ever gets it or not, but usually, after a period of time, that person will start giving you credit for being a support and will soften towards you. People live either in fear or in love. You can't have both. Coming together as five people, there's probably a lot of fear. There's probably at least four people that are heavily defended, and they will bat at you if they feel that you may hurt them. And who knows what you say that may hurt them. It's not known until it happens. And when it does happen, it's not personal. They are seeing a mirror of themselves. They're reacting to something they don't like in the mirror. And so you're helping them just by bringing out and helping them to work with this negative material. It's not about you. It's about them. Everything that we do is about us. Everything that other people do is about them. You have to keep that really straight and not take this stuff personally. So I would say to Kelly that right? Did I get that right?
Yes.
That try again and again to move back to a place where you don't have an attachment to an outcome, but that you're able to accept either anger or acceptance and give the same love in response. It doesn't make you inhuman. It makes you a person that's able to see another at the soul level, even when they're acting like boobs. It takes a lot of forgiveness, and the way you forgive other people for acting like boobs is to spend some time getting to know yourself, because we're all boobs. I love the phrase, we are all bozos on this bus. Let the person be a boob. Don't punish them for it, but give them the best you've got in support and encouragement, and wait. Another thing that has helped, and I wrote about this in 101, The Choice, a book that came out recently, I think 2011.
Right.
And in the book, I suggested if you're having trouble with a person, the relationship is like gefurchtwurfed, to use a technical term, pretend. When I was still in undergraduate college when I got my first professional job. I was supporting a family at that time. I had married a husband that didn't like to go to school and didn't want to work. So I really needed a job. And I got a really nice job as an assistant to the librarian at Speed Scientific School at the University of Louisville. So I don't have a single math, engineering, I don't have any of that. But I'm a librarian, so, you know, it's a matter of, it's the red book, it's over there, its number is 677.5. You know, it's on the second shelf. You know, if you know that, it doesn't matter whether you know what's in it if you're a librarian. So, you know, familiarize yourself so you can help your people, but you don't have to know about technology to be a technical librarian. Anyway, I had that job for a year. Now, I did move on as soon as possible because it was a terrible job. It was because of the boss. The boss was an old lady named Laura Kersey. She was close to 70 when I came. She had started the library at Speed School in 1941. I came in 1963. And so you can see that she had 22 years of experience being all by herself. Then I showed up, and she'd never had somebody to help before. And some of the things that she had in her mind that should be between a boss and an assistant were horrendous. and silly. And for 2 weeks, I struggled. And then it came to me that I was not in control of myself. I was not using the situation. I needed the job. It was a professional job. And at 21, it was really important that I show I could act professionally. In a professional position, you need to give 2 months' notice. So I determined to myself that I was going to keep the job at least another couple months. And then if I thought I could not take it anymore, I'd give 2 months' notice. But I didn't have to. Within a couple of weeks after that first decision to pretend that I loved her and that all I wanted to do was nice things for her, she had fallen in love with me, and I with her. And we had a wonderful rest of the year. She continued being silly, but I figured creative ways to respond that suited the situation and pleased her. And I learned everything I ever learned about library science from Laura Kersey, the old curmudgeon, because in showing me how to do this and that, she explained everything about libraries. She was running a library all by herself, so she knew about everything to do with libraries. The next job I got was the running of a 13-grade private school for girls. All by myself. I had my own shop at age 22. I mean, this is ridiculous. It never happens, but it happened to me. Didn't even have my graduate degree yet. But I was going to library school, and they hired me on because they couldn't find anybody to work for the money they were willing to give. I could live on it. I knew how to live on it. I knew how to live cheap. You have to when you're making a dollar an hour at the beginning of your marriage, which I was. And I loved that job, and I loved being a librarian. And I was sorry, in a way, to give it up. But when Don Elkins asked me to be his research partner and was willing to pay what they paid, and by that you can tell that it wasn't very much, because he was paying me out of his salary, I fell in love with that job, too, and really never looked back. But in terms of getting together with people and having everybody sort of find their place and find a way to fit in together and find a way not to poke each other with the sharp edges of personality, the best thing to do is know yourself well enough, be in love with yourself well enough to forgive others for being human, just like you've forgiven yourself. If you can forgive yourself, you can forgive others. And it makes life much simpler. You'll still be crying in your room a couple of, you know, now and then, because these things are bound to happen that are unfortunate. But it's not a killing thing when you know where you are and you know that it's far more worth it to take it on the chin and give back love than it is to develop a brangle and say nasty things that can't be unsaid. So I say use this, Kelly, as a chance to practice the way you see, the way you perceive. We're all souls. The way we behave is usually variable, but our souls are part of the Creator. So it's important to keep in mind who that person really is. That person is yourself. That person is the Creator. And you are one. And to express that to that person doesn't have to be in words. It can just be in stuff like forgiveness and not bringing stuff up again or throwing it in their face the next time, that kind of thing. Be as laid back as you can be. And I think that you're going to find that if it's possible to get along with those people, that would be the best way to go.
Okay, well, Kelly has a couple of added comments. Luckily, we are all couples, and we each have our own level of the shared house we live in. I like them all, but we will all have our own lives and space, thank God. It's just a huge change. God bless you. Good life advice for all.
That is lovely. Thank you, Kelly. God bless you, too.
So how about just the idea of transition itself? We just have maybe about 8 minutes left. So rather than going in a totally different topic, what about the idea of just transition, you know, because I remember reading in a psychology magazine many years ago that any kind of change is stressful, even a positive change, like getting married or having a baby or a new job that you love. It's still stressful just because of the fact that it's a change. And I remember there's a Chinese saying that says pain is resistance to change. So any advice on just going with the flow and making that transition?
Yeah, well, you know, it helps to know what you just said. It helps to realize that there is stress around, because then you can cut yourself a break, and we all need to cut ourselves a big old break. And it's hard. We are not used to change. I mean, think about starting anything new. Say you're trying to break a habit or start a habit. It takes time. I know when I started to meditate, for instance, I got sick as a dog. I would get nauseous, and I found out why by asking the Confederation about it. You know, not when I started to meditate, but later. And the reason for it is that your body has no use whatsoever for sitting without an object in front of it, either a person or a job or a video program or a computer program. Something that you're looking at. Even most families, a lot of their interaction is in front of the television, both of them or all of them looking at the same thing, rather than they're turning to each other and interacting. So meditation is completely different. You're sitting, and the whole point is not to have an object. The whole point is to let it all go. So when I realized that, I felt a lot better about what was happening to me, and the nausea wore off pretty quickly. Then there was another period. I guess the first one lasted about a half a year. The second one only lasted a couple of weeks. For a couple of weeks there, I had finally managed to do enough with meditation that I was starting to open to the inner realms, other realms of existence, as they say, and make it sound so mysterious, but, you know, they're right there with us, and you open to them through the practice of meditation and silence. And I saw monsters. I saw the boogeyman. I saw the scary man under the bed. I saw all those, and asking about it, they said, well, you know, you've accessed the lower levels of it. Astral and Devachanic planes, which are inhabited by the boogeymen that people have thought up, and then their thought forms, and they continue, and they're, especially when people talk to other people about the boogeymans, and that goes from parent to child and parent to child. And over the centuries, you know, they've become pretty strong thought forms. So that's the easiest thing, the broadest band thing, let us say, for you to see. So you just have to move through that until you are able to land not in the lowest levels of the inner planes, but up a little higher where the inhabitants are nicer to know. Jim, you have anything to add to that?
No, I'm absolutely blank on that.
Okay. You looked like you had something there. It was probably gas. Okay. So, Monica, ask again. I don't think I've satisfied you completely.
Well, let's see. Kelly, do you have any quick follow-ups to that? Because I think it was mainly just a little bit about change itself, but what you said was so interesting. I kind of want to ask about that now. Devachanic planes and inhabitants. So does that mean...
Pardon me for using jargon. It's jargon from the Theosophical Church, but they have done a lot of research into those inner planes, which correspond to time-space instead of space-time in the various rays, you know, red ray. Goes right up the color spectrum just like the rainbow does. And you just have to realize that you are indeed stressed. when these changes occur and give yourself a break. I mean, I don't really know how to say it in any more specific way because everybody reacts differently and everybody's going to need different things. But whatever your comfort is, chocolate comes to mind immediately for at least myself. Give yourself the comfort. Pat yourself on the back and say, yeah, you know, this is hard. This is not easy. And then just go on because we didn't sign up for this because it was easy. We signed up because we wanted to lighten the consciousness of planet Earth. And the only way we could do it was by getting here and finding things difficult from time to time. But that those are the times, the exact times, when we can achieve the most progress, shall we say, in spiritual maturity by turning to what we know or what we feel we know, because you can never know anything for sure metaphysically, but what you feel you know, and living like that, living unto that, and giving yourself credit for the difficulty of the change. It doesn't matter if it's horrible, as you said, or if it's delightful. Change is change. The body doesn't like it. The mind's not used to it. We all crave regularity. We like to know what's happening. And things don't always happen the way you think, and especially when a big change comes, nothing's happening the way you think. Just try to keep your feet metaphysically. Keep your mind on the ball. Keep your mind on love. And, I mean, I think sometimes we really have to just create it as we go and do the best we can. And, you know, if somebody doesn't like it, well, sue us because we're doing our best. And let it be that. And, like I said, continue giving ourselves and others the same break. We're human. We're going to screw up. And it's going to be okay because time will go on. And we have the time, no matter how long it takes, to do this again and do it to our satisfaction. It takes maybe 3 weeks to make a new habit. I read that somewhere. So if something new is happening, it might help to analyze it. The intellect is good for something. It's just not good for everything. Use your intellect, analyze the situation, analyze the change. If you can, divide it into various components. Work on one, then work on another, then work on another. Don't just keep working on one. But the more you familiarize yourself with the territory that you find yourself wandering in, the more conscious you can be about your responses.
Okay, we are actually out of time. We've got literally 2 minutes left. Kelly did ask a last question, and maybe we can do this next week, but are there any particular visualization methods or mantras to bring into balance these transitions happening all at once? If you have a quick answer, we could do that. Otherwise, we can
I have
leave
a quickie.
It. Okay.
The one for most people that helps is breathing in light and breathing out all that is stale and tired. Breathing in the light, breathing out all of the used up energy, breathing in life, breathing in the joy of the Creator's prana, breathing in newness, breathing in another shot at it, blowing out everything that has transpired that has hurt us or that is old or tired, just the way we eat and then we eliminate what we don't need. We've eaten experience. Eliminate what we don't need. Blow it out one way or another by meditation, by balancing. Good luck, Kelly. I'm not sure if we're still on the air, but
yes,
I will continue.
Yes, we are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't hear you, so I thought,
Yeah, the Blog Talk Radio was talking to me, and when that happens, I can't really talk, saying that we're just about out of time. So,
yeah.
I was just going to say, I want to... that, Kelly, just be sure and recharge a little bit and have some time and space to yourself. That's what I would like to add. And thank you, Carla. Thank you, Jim. And to our listeners.
Thank you, Monica.
You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. If you've enjoyed the show, visit llresearch.org and bringforth.org. That's bring the number 4 th.org. And check out the channeling transcripts there. We will be here next Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, and that is Friday, May 18th. We're here every Friday. We'll see you then.
Thanks. Look at that.